You're listening to the Yacht Racing Life Podcast, the show for racing sailors everywhere. Featuring exclusive stories and interviews from across the world of competitive sailing. Hosted by British sailing journalist Justin Chisholm. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Yacht Racing Life podcast. There's been so much going on in the sailing world recently that I thought it would be a good idea to catch up with someone who's across most, if not all of it. Ken Reed is president of North Sails and an executive vice president at the North Technology Group, the company that owns North Sails, as well as the world's two other major leading sailmaking brands, Quantum Sails and Doyle Sails. Ken spoke to me from his office in Newport, Rhode Island. Ken Reed, thanks for joining me on the Yacht Racing Podcast today. There's so much exciting stuff going on in the sailboat racing world right now. I wanted to get your take on it. You have a pretty good view across the whole of the racing world in terms of sailing. Can we begin with the success of the Amoca class? And I guess, in particular, the last Vendée Globe, which, you know, I was captivated by the match race at the front of that fleet. Were you watching as well?
Oh, God. Yeah, that's I was sad. Those are the races that are so exciting that you're sad that it's over. Right. It's just so well done. And so just the boats are so immaculately prepared, and it gives you a real appreciation for how hard it is to get ready to do a race like that, not just safely, but fast. And these teams who are doing that are really, really good, really solid teams. And I think the skippers would be the first to tell you that it's not a skipper, it's a team. And that's what people probably don't realize behind the scenes, behind the curtains in those programs, is how many people are there to actually make it all happen. Fantastic.
Now, I read in one of the press releases that Darlin and his team had spent about 4 years, basically since the last Vendée Globe, preparing that boat. Did North have any involvement in that whole thing? I'm sure you were involved in lots of the Amocas. And how does that all work?
Well, it's a lot of, you know, we've done sales for boats through many of our facilities in Europe, but it's safe to say that our French group, it's really a priority of theirs. The 100 footers, the Amocas, all the insanity that is sailing in France, it's kind of a central hub is North Sails France. And the young, talented group that's in North Sails France is something that we as a company are wildly proud of. But I think all these teams they kind of choose their path. And you know, all these boats now have such a hydro component and such an aero component. It's the teams who don't treat them as separate entities, but actually treat them as one, who are the most successful. And that is led by the America's Cup, Amocas, anything that's kind of skimming, flying, even going fast these days. The aero and hydro component have to be meshed together as one. And that's what the best Amoca teams do. And that's certainly what Charlie has done best. They're way ahead of the game when it comes to how much emphasis they put on this aero side of things. And it keeps all of our young, you know, that's why we have so many young design and engineers in France that want to go to France, because they just see this as crazy, wonderful opportunity with creative minds. And that's the DNA that we need, you know, constantly transplanted into North Sails, because that's, you know, it sounds nostalgic, but that's what Lowell North started this thing. This is a science-based company, and it's always going to be, and that the Amoca fleet just falls right into that category.
How different is the design process now on boats like the Amoca, and I guess the Ultims too, to when you were designing sails for Volvo programs, for Puma Ocean Racing?
It's the complication, the technical detail that comes that flows back and forth is just that much more. The tools, we call them the tools, right? The tools are not hammers and screwdrivers. The tools are smart people sitting behind behind computer screens with bespoke software packages that are very specific when it comes to little detail in boats, tiny detail in boats. Listen, when I was doing the Volvo, we would go through the same thing with the designers, with our first Volvo with the Botine office and our second Volvo with the Juan K office. And in many ways, I enjoy that as much as the sailing, maybe even more than the sailing, is the tiny details. And we always, I've said a million times that the race is won long before the starting gun goes. And that's the detail that goes into it. And that's where North Sails and Southern Spars and Future Fibers become an integral part of the entire design package that a designer is now relying on. A lot of these designers use RVPP now, for example. So if you don't complete the circle with this brain trust of smart people, which includes, by the way, how the skipper wants to sail the boat, that's also a very, very big part of this, then you're just going to be behind. It's not going to work. So you have to finish that circle when it comes to the design loop.
Does this new way of working, does it give you more certainty in a design? You say that the race is often decided at the design process, but I always got the feeling with the Volvo that we never really knew until the race started who was going to be fast and who was going to be slow.
Well, yeah. Then there's the ability to actually pick a shift and get in the right side of a weather system, and there's still plenty of human element involved. But you know, I'm guessing that most of the best of the Amoca skippers in any of these kind of high performance classes now have a pretty good idea who's going to be strong and what before the race starts. And like the last one I did, Groupama, nobody had an idea that Groupama was going to be such a fast reaching boat. And that at the beginning of the race, they were going to be so weak in light air. Nobody had an idea. And part of that was because they brought a lot of the design out of the Juan K office and took a lot of the design stuff in-house. So you know, there was an access except for the Groupama group. So there's still plenty of that. There's still plenty of tricks and secrecy and gut feel and things like that. But there better be a scientific base to the whole package or you're probably going to get left behind.
The Amoca class generally has been a raging success, hasn't it? Even away from the Vendée Globe, which attracts this enormous entry, all of the Amoca Globe series events are really well attended. What do you think is the key to that success?
Well, in France, listen, it's a different game over there from a sponsorship standpoint, just from a how young people grow up to be professional sailors standpoint. You know, it's really people in the United States, for example, aspire to be baseball, football, basketball players. In France, that would make the list, right? If you were a young kid growing up, that's just a different mindset. That's a different ball game altogether. So they're starting to think about this at a really young age, and that's what creates this crazy culture. And the culture then, when you have so many French specific sponsors that then are willing and able to jump in at really reasonable, if you think about it, in the big sponsorship world, these races are kind of, nothing's cheap, but these races are kind of cheap because there's one crew member and there's really one race course and you kind of start and you finish, right? You can always spend more money when it comes to a sailboat racing program, as everybody listening to this podcast knows. But in the big picture, if you compared it to our Volvo programs where we stopped, 12 times around the world, and we figured out each one of those stops, you could easily spend $750,000 just at one stopover, just with the infrastructure alone. it's kind of a cheap race. So you combine sponsorship dollars, young enthusiasm to I want to be a great offshore sailor, along with just the pure spectacle of the thing and the fact that these boats are cutting edge. It's a pretty solid combination of creating something that's good and if not great. And I think they've stepped on great at this stage.
Is there a danger that the French-centric nature of all of this will limit the class ultimately, or do you think there's just enough growth within France and they'll always be crazy about it?
I knew you were going to ask that for some reason. And I think a number of people, including the French over the years, have always been really concerned that the very French nature of this class is a problem. And I think it's also very safe to say that has been completely thrown out the window. It is as healthy a class as there is in the world. There are plenty of other people from outside the country who are trying to join, you know, kind of join the party. But the French-centric side of things is not holding it back, clearly. And you know, if it becomes more international, does it necessarily become better? I don't think anybody knows the answer, but at this stage, who cares? Because the thing is, the event is kicking ass, the boats are kicking ass, the class is kicking ass, and you know, don't change much because you start making change for the sake of making change. It's the DNA of I think they've done a really nice job of evolving with boats and teams and how the boats are sailed, while still maintaining that DNA of the crazy offshore experience. God bless them. It's when companies or events start really going in and trying to change DNA is when you get yourself in trouble, because you're kind of swinging for the fence and hoping like hell you hit a home run sometimes.
We've seen plenty of European, you know, other European countries, the Germans, the Brits, joining in with this whole thing, especially in the Vendée. What about the States? Why does it just never seem to take off in the States? The class only visits there when it's doing a transatlantic race.
Good question. I think Grand Prix in many ways has really fallen off in the States. You know, we're trying to, through the New York Yacht Club and through other events, we're trying very hard to kind of start bringing Grand Prix back into the game. But there's no question that young culture, you know, Paul Caillard and a guy named Bill Roux are working really hard to try to change young culture when it comes to Olympic classes right now. They've had their struggles in the past couple of years, but I give them a lot of credit for trying something different, by the way, and pushing ahead with getting young people to just start thinking about the highest end of sailboat racing at a young age. We don't do that as much here. Not, you know, when I was a boy, you know, this is what my father always used to say, when I was a boy, I think we did way more, because there was, you know, the offshore, the maxi class, the Olympic classes, it was really being dominated by Americans when I was young. So what, you just wake up in the morning and it's like, I want to be like them. How am I going to get there? There isn't that impetus right now for young people to look at fellow Americans. You know, there's a few. I mean, what Charlie did in the Around the World race is obviously great. Has it created a revolution or even an evolution of young people wanting to go offshore? I don't see it. So far, but we got to keep trying. People like us have to keep giving back and keep trying to get a little bit more energy going when it comes to that kind of stuff. The Puma program was phenomenal around here, and I can't tell you, I think we had 10,000 people that might have actually gone day sailing on that boat or something on those boats. And it just didn't seem to stick, though. You know, I don't see a lot of young Americans waking up in the morning going, I want to go do the solo twin race in a 33 footer offshore. It's still the same people. When I go do a double handed race, the same people have been doing it for the last 7 years, and they're all my age. Maybe one or two exceptions. So somehow we got to keep pushing. We got to keep giving back as people who have had such a great run in this sport. And maybe we find that juice again.
Ken, let's talk about possibly some of the biggest news. Ferrari arriving in sailing with their Hypersail project. Giovanni Soldini's leading that project. A little birdie tells me that Norths were pretty closely involved in all of that. We don't know too much about it other than some glitzy Ferrari style marketing we've seen on the launch.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about it?
Pure insanity. This is Imoca's on steroids, right? This is where America's Cup meets the 100-foot trimarans. You know, that I think it's that simple. It also leads back to the very first question you asked about the integration of aero and hydro. So, yeah, the Ferrari group came to us early days, and you know, I go way back with Guillaume Berthier, and it started with a conversation he had. It's like, all right, I can tell you a little bit about this. What are our next steps? And it was then I hooked up the right people and kind of got the ball rolling. But this is a pure aero hydro circle that is in place between their group. So it's the interesting part. It's the Ferrari side of the world. It's this kind of Skunk Works Ferrari group. It's some of the best and brightest minds in the marine industry group with Verdier and all of his group of crazies, which I say very affectionately, by the way. And and then it's the North group of Southern and North. And then you throw in Soldini and the whole sailing side of things. So it is really, it's being run exactly how a modern race boat program is to be run. Exactly. Now, does that guarantee success? Of course it doesn't. Because remember, one of the things, to revert back to an earlier conversation, when you're dealing with tools, and again, tools are software, when you're dealing with the software and all of a sudden you're designing something ahead of the software or what the software, so then you got to catch up, right? So it's not just creating a package, it's creating the tools to create a package, which throws, you know, an interesting wrench into the work, so to speak. So, you know, this is, there's some wonderful aspirations for this program, but I think they're smart enough to kind of make sure they walk before they run. And I'm kind of proud of the fact that they're taking their time on this, because this is, this could be special. And it's from a North Technology Group standpoint, it's a wonderful project to be a part of. And we get to stretch it out. We've done deals with our clothing line. So we're going to have a Ferrari clothing line that's going to be integrated, a performance line, a clothing line. And then, of course, all the sales rigging package that goes along with it. So this is a dream for North Technology Group to be a part of. And it's just a good lot of fun. It gets us to utilize a lot of our best and brightest.
Is there the opportunity, do you think, with all of this resource for something really groundbreaking to come out of it in terms of, I don't know, materials or technology or?
So they keep me in the loop. So when I ask, I usually get if I get a pause to the answer when I ask something, that means they don't want to tell me because they think I have a big mouth or something. I don't even know. In today's day and age of sailboat racing, I don't even know what groundbreaking means anymore, because it seems to be happening every other week. I just watched some video of these kids at the Moth kids. Some of them are my age at the Moth Worlds. This is just this sport is changing. I did a talk in New York a few months ago, And you can make a very good case that there is no other sport on the planet that is changing as rapidly as the sport of sailing is. Nothing. So you look, so what do you think? You think of, you know, sports that are constantly, you know, kind of pushing the barriers, right? So you think of Formula One. You look at a 2000 Formula One car and a 2025 Formula One car, and unless you're a pretty avid fan, they look darn close to the same. And you go down the list of what innovation in sport means. Any of the, you know, soccer ball is a soccer ball, right? Sorry, football. Baseball is baseball. Bat's a bat. How much do those sports, have they really changed? Then you look at a 2000 America's Cup boat that I sailed and a 2025 America's Cup boat. It's a different sport. So the Ferrari is just another example of pushing the edge and showing that sailing isn't, it's not our father's, it's not even our cousins, it's certainly not our grandfather's sport anymore. It is a different animal altogether. And these young kids are learning to fly early because guess what? All these boats are going to be flying sooner or later.
Let's talk about the Moths. I was going to come on to that anyway. A pretty spectacular event. The weather didn't really play ball for them completely, which was a pity because if there's a class that's built for classic Garda conditions, it's certainly the Moth. Who really impressed you out of all that? I guess Enzo Ballinger, the overall winner. He kind of came from nowhere.
So I've been very good friends and colleagues with Bruno Dubois for a number of years. And one thing that Bruno has proven when he left his day to day of running North Sails France and became kind of a project manager, and obviously did a couple around the world races, winning one, chose Charles Quadrillier as the skipper of that project, and kind of everybody said, you know, kind of who the heck is this kid, right out of the blocks. He knows how to choose talent. And he told me about this new kid in Barcelona this past fall when we were there for the America's Cup, and said, "You just watch, this kid is special." And you look at the who's who of competitors in this Moth Worlds, and I don't care what the conditions are, but if you're winning that regatta, you're doing something special. And Bruno was right. He thinks this kid is special. So it'll be really fun to watch the next few years of this kid's career, because, you know, these fearless, young, talented, I don't even know if they're called sailors anymore. Frankly, they're called something, but, you know, it's a long way from my Sunfish back in the day. I can tell you that. Bruno knows how to pick them, and he's proven that he was right about this kid as well.
Yeah. And the thing that always amazes me about this class is the speed of the development. I mean, I wouldn't even claim to know anything about where they're up to with the foils. It's not my world, but from what people tell me, every year is a massive step change in the technology. Are you guys at North involved in driving that stuff, or is that being driven by the sailors? How does it work?
Yeah, it's a bit, it goes a bit hand in hand. The sail, obviously, when 3DI jumped into the Moth world, it changed the game. Then they did the deck sweepers. That changed the game. Now the batten fittings, and they're using taping layouts that have so much more control over the Cunningham, their ability to make the sail deep, their ability to make the sail flat. It's really, the Moth is really a trickle down from the cup boats, because you need all the power in the world to get out of the water sometimes, and all of a sudden you need no power, right? You need to have some sort of system that adapts to radical changes in apparent wind. So that's been really fun, and really fun for our One Design team to kind of stay in the loop of this hyper technology. But I give the Moth class credit. You know, there have been a couple breakthroughs in the Moth where somebody has just shown up and started killing people. And they've always had the ability to say, oops, hey, we're not going to do that. Like, this is madness. This is a step too far. They don't do that. They purposely say, hey, guess what? This is what you signed up for, folks. And God bless you. And it's going to cost more money. It costs more money, but this is what you signed up for. So they've been very consistent. And I give the class a lot of credit for staying consistent, because it would have been really easy on some of these big breakthroughs. I mean, imagine the day, I think it was like 2004 or something, that when the flying boat showed up, nobody said, we need to ban a boat from flying. They said, hell yeah, bring it on. Let's go faster and higher. So I give the moth class a lot of credit, actually.
That's a good point. Foiling's really, if you read the magazines and look at the websites, it would be easy to think sailing's all about foiling. But then I look out in Mallorca over the bay at a weekend, and there's very few people foiling other than a couple of wing foilers. There's nobody foiling on boats here. Everybody's racing traditional, conventional boats. How do you see the balance between those two worlds?
Well, certainly our world, you know, our commercial world is still boats in the water versus boats out of the water. But let's go 10 years into the future. Where are we going to be then? I keep thinking ahead, right? And again, I think the youth of today, we're going to see more. There's several more small, and I mean small, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 foot dinghies that are going to be able to go both ways, which means they're going to be able to foil and they're going to be able to sit in the water. And I just think that when the commercial, when the young group of sailors today get to the point where they're becoming a part of the commercial marketplace, they're not going to want to go back in the water. So does that mean cruising boats are going to be foiling? I doubt it, but I've been pretty wrong about other stuff in the past. But don't think for a second that they're not going to want to go fast. It's changing. It is changing, and very, very rapidly. So, yeah, I don't know. Stay tuned. Yet to be seen.
Foiling's even had a massive effect on ocean racing. We've just been talking about the Ferrari Hypersail. We've got the Amokas foiling around the world. We've got the Ultims kind of getting their foiling. They've transformed the whole game in terms of being able to deal with weather systems a lot better. You guys used to get outrun by weather systems, and the big fear was dropping off the back of a front and being left behind by the fleet in the Volvo. Now these guys can ride right the way across the Indian Ocean on one weather front. That's all amazing stuff, but it also means that they're sailing the boats from inside now. And I wanted to get your view on what you think, how that has changed. Is it for the better or the worse? And are we stuck with this now going forward?
Well, I have a feeling we're stuck with it. Let's talk about it. The violence, listen, even in the Volvo boats, there were times where the violence of the water, it's not really the wind that gets you. We always used to talk about it's the waves and it's the water. The violence of the water, I'm having a problem with my left wrist, but I remember three specific times where you get hit in the chest with a wave and you're holding on to the wheel and you're not smart enough to let go. And all of a sudden you're laying in the back of the boat with half a wheel in your hand. Those boats, the Volvo 70s, as spectacular boats as they were, and I maintain they're some of the best designs ever made. These are just different. So the violence of the water is what's got people inside from a safety standpoint. Justin, I wish I could say that people got to get back outside again, but I don't see it happening. The faster you go, the safer. You have to make it safe, because we're pushing some boundaries here that are pretty crazy. And there's stuff in the ocean. First of all, there's waves that people kind of forget about from time to time, and there's big waves. And there's also, it feels like there's more debris in the ocean than ever before. And then you mix in the fact that these new boats, you know, the original, let's talk about the original Whitbreads. They went around the world with one keel and one rudder right in a row. So essentially it's a knife edge going through the ocean, right? And still hitting stuff. Now it's like a comb going through, right? You have multiple boards, you have keels and multiple rudders. So you're going through the ocean with a comb. And you think about it that way, and you're exponentially increasing the odds of actually hitting something. So maybe there isn't more stuff in the ocean. We're just creating a wider platform in order to smack something on the way through. So keeping people safe is of the utmost importance, especially as these boundaries continue to get pushed. So I don't see, as boats get faster and faster, I don't see people coming outside. No way.
Do you think we've seen the last of boats like Comanche that you skippered for a long time?
Well, it depends on what the racing rule is. There's a really healthy maxi class right now, of which I've been so fortunate to be involved with a brand new owner on a boat called V. It used to be called Tango, and we're in our second year of just having so much fun and around the buoys racing, and now much more kind of navigational up and down the coast racing. Went to the Caribbean last year as a group. The group is talking together as a group, and it's IRC based. And so it really depends on the handicap. As long as you keep the handicap consistent, then I think boats are going to grow to that handicap rule. And you're not going to see in the type of, you know, the maxi world, Saint-Tropez, the North Sound Regatta down in the BVIs, all of these are windward leeward and navigational kind of around islands and rocks and stuff like that racing that I don't think a foil at this stage can rate to the IRC rule. So the handicap rule itself is going to govern. It's going to put boundaries around what those types of boats are. So because of that, a boat like Comanche is absolutely still could come into play. And I think there's talk of a few new 100 footers that might come out and play soon. Are they going to be innovative compared to the current generation? Absolutely. But are we going to see them with foils and popping out of the water? I don't think so, because I don't think the IRC rule wants to see that. And that will be the governing factor at the end of the day.
And also that the owners, it's a different game, isn't it? Once you start trying to foil offshore for the owners, it just changes everything.
Well, the owner treats these programs now, like Jim Clark and Comanche, that was his sports team. Jim did know, his wife, Christy, did several offshore races with us, including Sydney Hobart. But Jim just, that was his sports team. That was like owning the Boston Celtics for him, you know, and let's go break as many records as possible. And that was the goal of the boat from day one. And sure enough, the boat was and still is pretty darn successful when it comes to that stuff. Other owners, like the owner of V, for example, there's been 5 minutes total where he hasn't been driving the boat. He did this because he wants to jump in. And like I have said a million times, he wants to play tennis against Bjorn Borg. You know, he wants to jump in at the highest level of professional sailing, but he wants to participate. He wants to hit back the forehand, and God bless him. So as those two groups, as they become wider apart, professional sports teams and owner-driver teams, they're becoming much more structured as one or the other. There's very few kind of crossovers in the middle now. And I think that's good for the sport. That's great for the sport. I love it that he wants to drive the whole time. And, you know, God bless. We need more people like that. And we got to make sure they have fun, and we've got to make sure they learn, and we got to make sure that they're coming back for more, because if we start losing these people, then we're in trouble. But right now, I think it's a pretty good format, and it's a pretty good structure. And some of this racing is really starting to thrive again.
You mentioned Jim Clark and his idea of having a sports team that was a sailing team. He was kind of ahead of his time. SailGP's trying to promote that whole idea now with franchises for the teams. What are your thoughts on SailGP?
I haven't had a whole lot to do with it. It's kind of a different side of our sport from our, you know, North Technology Group revolves around a group of companies with very commercial aspirations, right? We, our ownership, our management, we are here for a reason to run a good, solid business and to entertain as wide a broad audience as we possibly can in the sport of sailing, primarily in the sport of sailing, from kiting and foiling and even apparel all the way to the biggest, highest tech boats in the world. So SailGP has its own kind of commercial aspirations that, you know, we just haven't, ever since they used those boats in Bermuda, for example, where we were a big part of, they've kind of gone off and had their own, done their own thing. They have their own aero program. They have their own hydro program. And really, North Technology Group hasn't had a lot to do with that. So we'll continue selling sails and rigs and rigging to people who use our stuff a lot. And we do, I think Future Fibers does quite a bit of work with them. Doyle does quite a bit of work with them on the little jibs that they put on the boat. But for the most part, I haven't had a whole lot to do with them other than, you know, being a fan from time to time and watching these things go rip around the race course.
Let's talk about the America's Cup. I don't want to get us embroiled in the shenanigans that are going on right now. From your point of view, as the president of Norths, you were heavily involved in the America's Cup last time. Did anything come out of that from a technology point of view around sail design or materials that's you know, going to change things for everybody?
Oh, gosh, yes. Every day. It already is. Some of it's subtle. Some of it bigger picture. But the bottom line is when sails came back into the America's Cup, that became a huge shot in the arm for North Sails. Because if you think about it, we loan out all of our best and brightest to these America's Cup programs, and all they do is get better and brighter. The tools get better, the people get better, the creativity gets far broader. And yes, it has affected from cruising sails to one design sails to every sail we make in some form or fashion has a trickle down of America's Cup. Now, is there in the future a really big jump ahead? Listen, we always have a R&D team that's working on stuff like that. Is it months away, years away? It's always really hard to say, but we will always have kind of an aspirational group working on the side on different things. And the America's Cup really is an impetus to keep these people thinking ahead. You know, it's great. It's great. And our best and brightest, and especially our young guys, like we talked about the young engineers and designers in France, half of those people are going to work for America's Cup programs now. So we hope this thing gets sorted out very quickly and kind of gets back on track and back on schedule, because it's good for, I think it's good for the sport. It's still, no matter how you look at it, the America's Cup is the biggest brand in, you know, no taxi driver in New York City is going to know anything about sailing other than the America's Cup. We just got to make sure this is part of the America's Cup, right? The insanity, the off the water insanity is almost more entertaining sometimes than the on the water insanity. So let's hope this gets sorted out pretty quick so we can get back on schedule and get these boats and sailors and teams out sailing again.
The cup is spectacular. That these boats are just incredible. But do you feel that once people have got their head around the speed and the concept of foiling boats in a match race, it's lost a little bit, because all you can now see are helmets, bouncing around if they're cyclists. It's a little bit like the question I asked you about, you know, the foiling and sailors being inside. Does it lose something? Is there a way of making it more interesting from a human point of view?
It's a good question, and I wish I had an answer to that. The bottom line is, obviously, the answer to your question is yes. It's a bit of a shame that we don't see the faces and the personalities, and we're not a little more part of that, right? And it sounds like the next iteration of America's Cup boats, if Team New Zealand has their way, it'll even be less, because I don't think there's grinder. They're talking about more push button controls. So is that a shame? Yeah, of course it is. You know, So you have to balance, you know, every time somebody says, oh, you know, this America's Cup, this is boring, blah, 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 blah. Go back and watch a 12-meter race where it was 20 minutes to the Port Ley Line here in Newport on a 12-meter. Now, are they the most beautiful, majestic boats maybe ever made? Yeah, of course they are. But for a pretty finite group of people, really, when you think about it. If I go out and see a 12-meter, which they're sailing off of Newport every single day, my hometown, you can't help but just go, damn, that is a good-looking boat. That's sailing. That's elegant sailing in its own right. You, me, and about seven other people think the same way, right? So has this America's Cup brought in a broader audience? It has to have. It has to have. Is it a shame that it's only, it feels like it's made for TV now, you know, versus the sailing and the sailors? Yeah, maybe, but let's just see where it goes. This is the America's Cup. You never know where it's going. We could be sitting there. We could be sitting in no time. We could be sailing 12 meters again. Who the hell knows, right? So let's just let this play out. Some people, they're trying to reel in the America's Cup like it has to fall in a certain blueprint. That's the beauty of the America's Cup. There is no blueprint. It is made for the insane, and God bless it. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see where this thing shakes out. It's a shame on one hand, but on the other hand, you'd shake your head and say, kind of sounds like the America's Cup to me.
A good point. We will have to wait and see. Kenny, I just wanted to close with a congratulations on your forthcoming induction to the National Sailing Hall of Fame in the US. I know the ceremony is not until September, but that must be quite special.
Very special, emotional, especially for my dad, who's 91, who's still with us. My mom, who was my brother, my brother Brad, and my biggest fan for sure. But yeah, it's super special. It was unexpected, and I'm very proud, but I can't wait to thank all the people that helped me get here. And they always talk about, you know, did you ever dream? My dreams were never this big to even consider something like this. I'm a day-to-day guy. What's the next regatta? What's the next race? And all of a sudden, for a group like this to come back and say, hey, we'd like to congratulate you on your body of work, that means a lot. And I do not take it lightly, and I'm very, very proud.
I think I and a lot of people think you have the best job in sailing. Do you feel that way as well?
Of course I do. Every day I go home and I might have a kind of a bad day doing whatever I'm doing, and my wife looks at me and just shakes her head like, would you shut up? You have the best job in the world. So I agree. We love our brand here. We love what we do at work every day, and I still get to get on the water in some of the coolest boats in the world and meet some of the coolest people in the world. That's still the fun part. I do not dispute your comment. I'm not trading. Don't break out a violin for me in the near future. I promise you that.
Well, Ken, thanks so much for spending time with me today. It's been a fascinating chat. I knew it would be. And I'm sure the Yacht Racing Life podcast listeners will enjoy it.
Thanks for doing this, Justin. It's good knowledge for everybody who loves sailing. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Life podcast. We will be back soon with another top name interview. But in the meantime, check out yachtracinglife.com for more great content from across the sailing world.